So I'm going to read, Jerry handed me this morning, and I'm going to read it because it's just good. It's just good. All right. So this is from the book, what's it called, Jerry? Mysteries? Mysteries, yes. So it was a breezy and a hot afternoon. We were sitting at a table in the shade just outside the chamber of books. I call it the Moses paradigm, said the teacher. It's one of the most important keys of your calling. Moses led the children of Israel out of Egypt. But what happened before he did that? Years before the Exodus, God caused Moses to undertake his own exodus out of Egypt. Only after Moses' own exodus did Moses lead the exodus of the Israelites out of Egypt. Moses brought Israel to Mount Sinai, but years before that event, God brought Moses to the same mountain. When Moses fled from Egypt, he came to the land of Midian, and there entered into the covenant of marriage. 40 years later, Moses would bring Israel to the same land to enter into a covenant of marriage to God. Do you see the pattern? Everything happened to Moses first, then to Israel. Yes, but it goes back even further. When Moses was a baby, God caused Pharaoh's daughter to draw him out of the Nile River and thus save his life. It was because of that that he was given the name Mohe or Moses, which means drawn out. And what was Moses' calling and destiny? It was to draw out his people from the land and ways of Egypt. So his entire life and calling, his destiny was to do that which was done to him, to save others by drawing them out. The Moses paradigm is this. The key of your calling and life is found in what God has done for you. Seems pretty simple. In the same way that God has touched your life, so touch the lives of others. The disciples fulfilled their calling when they made disciples of others. As they themselves had been made disciples by Messiah, Paul fulfilled his calling when he imparted to others the revelations that God had imparted to him. And when he ministered grace to the lives of others as God had first ministered that grace to him. As God has given himself to you, so give yourself to others. As God has saved you, so save others. And deeper than that, love others, not only as God has loved you, but with the same love with which he has loved you. For all that God has called you to do and fulfill, you already have. God has already done for you. Now go and do likewise. And as I read this, and then as we were in worship, so just been thinking a lot lately about Eastgate and what is, you know, what is Eastgate supposed to be about, and what are we supposed to be, like, where are we going? What are we supposed to be doing? And so as I read this, I was thinking about how I had shared before, like, right, I saw that the things that we had been through, that because we have chosen life, because we have chosen hope, and because that we were going to be a well for people to come and to drink, right? Because of what we have been through, which is what he's saying, the Moses paradigm, because what we have gone through, God can use and we can lead others out of. We can lead others out of despair. We can lead others out of hopelessness. And, you know, I was sitting here and I've been thinking a lot. Since I moved back here, I've served into another man's ministry, right? And so I was thinking about this, like, I don't really know exactly how to do anything but that. Does that make sense? Now I'm finding out. And we all are going to find out. And as much as I would much rather be pouring into another man's ministry, seasons have changed. It's shifted, and we have to shift. I have to shift. We have to shift. And it doesn't matter. And you guys, when we discover exactly what it is that we are supposed to be about and be doing, it is gonna wreak havoc on the enemy's kingdom. And it's not, you know, and this is what, this is, you know, who knows? Maybe what Eastgate is called to do is right, be in here and worship and keep things out and let things in. And if that is what it is, then that is what we will do. Right? Like, holy cow. Like, if that, what a privilege that is. Now, right, the Bible talks about taking care of the orphans and the widows and they're making disciples and those are all things that yes. But I feel like we're at a place where we're discovering who we are in this season. Who we are now that things have shifted. And God, what does it look like now? And I was thinking, Penny had asked me like a month ago, you know, what's up for next year? And I was like, okay, God, what is up for next year? And he said Ezekiel 37. And I'm like, Ezekiel 37. Or I asked him, what is East Gates? I don't even know how I worded it. And I'm like, okay, God, that's the, you know, the Valley of Dry Bones. That's Ezekiel, the prophet. And as I was reading, we are a prophetic church. We are a prophetic people. Whether we all realize it or understand it, it doesn't deny the fact that we are a prophetic body. We hear, we move, and our worship is getting more prophetic. It's just amazing. So the first part, Ezekiel in 37, right, it's the Valley of Dry Bones, and God heard the cry of the Israelites and said, they're hopeless. They're hopeless, right? They're hopeless. And he took Ezekiel through this encounter of the dry bones being raised, and God is going to do this, and God is going to do all that. And then in the middle of the chapter, God is talking about bringing the Israelites back out of exile and bringing them all together, and the things that had divided them would no longer divide them. And my heart's desire. And guys, we can't have, unity has to start here. Now, unity does not mean that we all agree on everything. Unity means I honor you, I honor what you think, I honor you, and I love you enough to sit down and have a conversation about our disagreements, and we walk away still loving one another. Ruthie had a word this morning about self and the spirit of self and how the spirit of self creeps in and we don't even realize it and we start to grumble and complain about one another. And I'm guilty. I was just called out on something 2 weeks ago. And I looked at it and I was like, oh my gosh, that's not my heart. And then the other night, I went somewhere and like that whole thing, and I had to check myself because I had started to slip back into functioning in that thing that my friend my beautiful friend Nicole here had called me out on, because I was operating in something I shouldn't have been operating in. We are family. Right? Here we go, Ezekiel. This is so the end. So he's bringing them together. And then towards the end of the chapter, this is what God says that he is going to do for the people of Israel. I'm in the message, and it looks like it's starting at verse like 20 maybe. So then take the sticks you've inscribed and hold them up so the people can see them. Tell them, God, the Master says, watch me. I'm taking Israel out of the nations in which they've been exiled. I'll gather them in from all directions and bring them back home. I'll make them one nation in the land on the mountains of Israel and give them one king over them all. Never again will they be divided into two nations, two kingdoms. Never again will they pollute their lives with their no God idols and all those vile obscenities and rebellions. I'll save them out of all their old sinful haunts. I'll clean them up. They'll be my people, and I'll be their God. My servant David will be king over them, and they'll all be under one shepherd. They'll follow my laws and keep my statutes. They'll live in the same land I gave my servant Jacob, the land where your ancestors lived. They and their children and their grandchildren will live there forever. That's a promise and an inheritance. And my servant David will be their prince forever. I'll make a covenant of peace with them. Here's what this covenant of peace is going to do. This is where I felt like God. A covenant of peace that will hold everything together. It's going to hold everything together. An everlasting covenant. It means it doesn't matter our circumstances. It doesn't matter what's going on around us. The promise of God is that in the midst of all of those things, it will hold everything together. I will make them secure and place my holy place of worship at the center of their lives forever. Yeah, it goes along with what you spoke. I'll live right there with them. This is what I'm asking God for Eastgate in this coming year. This is what I believe. Like, I love the first part of Ezekiel, and it's prophetic, and it's amazing, and it's wonderful, but if everyone can experience the later part of this chapter is what my heart's cry is. I'll make them secure and place my holy place of worship at the center of their lives, and I'll live right there with them. I'll be their God, and they'll be my people. The nations, here's what will happen. The nations will realize that I, God, make Israel holy when my holy place of worship is established at the center of their lives forever. If we want Freeport to be changed, this is what just needs to happen. Worship. Worship. That the spirit of David that is within us, because we are all worshipers, when we allow that to be manifested and to be awakened and to come out, when we allow the presence of God to be established in a place, then the nations will realize, like, all of the doing and the toiling and all of that. It's like if the tabernacle of God or the presence of God or however you want to say it, if that is established in a place, then it says, God's word says, the nations will realize that I am their God and they are my people, and I have brought them out of something, and I have brought them into me. I have brought them out of all of those things that have kept them down and buried and dead. God said, I will bring you out of your graves, Israel, where you were hopeless. I have given you hope, and I will give you hope, and I will be your hope. Oh, I'm yelling. But I don't like yelling. But the nations will realize, the city of Freeport will realize, when we completely and wholeheartedly invite the presence of God to where he is the only thing that matters, and his presence is the only thing that matters, and everyone else is saying, this is what we should be doing, this is what we should be doing or not doing, and I'm saying, ha, 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 ha. That they will know and see. I want something so phenomenal, like revival, like nothing we've ever experienced. The latter will be greater than the former. And let me tell you, I've experienced some really neat former things. But the latter rain. The latter rain. We are, guys. We're supposed to just establish a place for the presence of God to dwell. To dwell. Not just come, but a place for him to inhabit and dwell. And that starts in you and I. It's you in you and I. It's in our hearts. And then we can establish it in this place. And then we can, not only can we establish it here, but then we can take it out there. Because out there, right, out there, the presence of God is needed. It may not be known it's needed, but that's exactly what's needed. But it has to be established in here first. Because if we know how to establish it in here, it won't waver out there. And if it's established, if what God has called us to do is established, then we won't be running around, scurrying around, trying, right? Like, I just, because people have their opinions and ideas, and they're wonderful. But when we find what God has called us to do, then we just need to be about doing that. And that's it. That's it. It's what he, right? Like, just be about, I'll make them secure and place my holy place of worship at the center of their lives forever. He promises to live right here with us. He will be our God and we will be his people. And the nations will realize that God made us holy when we made a place of worship established at the center of our lives. So, which leads me to next week. We're going to show a video, and it's it's called Revival Begins in the Heart. And it's an incredible teaching. It's one of the, I would encourage everyone to be here. We're going to actually open with that, at 10. We're going to start it at 10 because it's like 50 minutes. And then after that, I want to do worship because there's such a, it's just, it's good. It's about getting heart healthy. It's good stuff. It's good stuff. And I think it will just move us, continue to move us forward. And so next week, if you're not here at 10, you might miss a little bit of it at the beginning, but I wanted to put that out there. So like, yeah, he's just heart healthy. Yes. Heart healthy. Because we were created to love. And we were created to pour out. We were created to love one another with his love. And you ever listen to something over and over and it's like you know you're supposed to get it, but something, it's just not, it's not going in. And I've listened to this like 3 or 4 times because I know. And it's actually caused me to take some steps to move forward in my own self to get heart healthy. You know? So, Nay, do you have something Wednesday night? Or you have something Wednesday night? All right. So, Wednesday night, I'll pull up Bethel or something. So if you want to come Wednesday night at 6:30, we'll be here. We'll have Bethel worship or something up on the screen. All right. Well, God, I thank you for this morning, and I thank you for your presence. And God, I ask that you, God, show us how to establish the place of worship in our own lives, in this place as a body, and then in the place of Freeport. God, that you would show us, God, we just love you, and we thank you, and we praise you, and you are good, and you are faithful, and you are just, and you are praiseworthy. You are so praiseworthy. And I just thank you for your word. I thank you for your promises. I thank you for who you are. And I thank you for worship. I thank you that it moves us. It puts our perspective in alignment. It puts our hearts in alignment. It moves us. We love you and we thank you. In your name, Jesus. Amen.